to access the microphone, and we are recording, I believe. Good stuff. So, Anchor's here. Tell me about yourself. Great, so we're here today.
Yeah.
Got myself, Tom Penn, and I am joined by my co-host.
Stuart Russell,
bloody good bloke. And this is a new podcast. Super thin walls, so need to keep the voice down. But this is still a very new podcast. It's the debut podcast, in fact. And we're going to do this. We don't know how often. We don't have a name for it yet.
It
could be called the Pinch Hitter Podcast. Why not? Let's go with the Pinch Hitter Podcast. Rolls off the tongue.
Tick.
Name done. Chosen.
PHP.
Move on. Move on with that. The Pinch Hitter. Let's explain what that is. It's a daily email, which is everything you need if you're a cricket fan or you want to get into cricket. I am the Pinch Hitter, and everyone who reads it.
Are you a Pinch Hitter though?
I am, if need be.
That's your role.
I can do whatever. I can be a baby boycott.
Can I talk about when I first learned what a pinch hitter was?
You can. Did you think it was a pinch hitter?
No, I didn't think it was a pinch hitter. Charles Kingsbury, friend of the pod,
okay,
introduced me to a pinch hitter with the suggestion in 2007 World Cup, Michael Vaughan was, I think he was bowled, having used up about 12 balls without scoring.
It wasn't a natural ODI.
Batsman, certainly not a natural ODI opener.
No.
Charles Kingsbury's suggestion, going into a must-win game in the famous stroke infamous Super 8s.
Always good to hear about the Super 8s.
Yeah. Friend of the pod, the Super 8s, was that Liam Plunkett should open the batting,
okay. As a pinch hitter. Okay.
And I said, what's a pinch hitter? And he said, the opposite of Vaughan.
Yep.
So maybe it's the opposite of Vaughan podcast.
Just the opposite of Vaughan.
Everything. Which, to be fair, is a good thing.
Is a good pod. I think the first pinch hitter I was ever aware of was maybe our good friend Adam Gilchrist.
Yeah.
Gilly, to his mates.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Church, his other nickname.
Yeah. Gilchurch,
exactly. Yeah. And he was, it was very much in vogue in the 99 World Cup. I think Ridley Jacobs. Might have to cut that bit out slightly. Not the time, for regional.
Always do the accent.
He was another. And I think what a pinch hitter essentially is it's not an opening batsman who goes out to bat with the intention of smashing it.
Yeah.
And not really caring what happens. It's given a license.
It's not that. It is that.
That's what it is. Yeah. So given a license to thrill, but someone like Jason Roy, you couldn't say is a pinch hitter because
that's his thing.
He's a bat. That's fine.
Yeah.
It's like
everything that's great about a night watchman, but he's got the license to smash it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything that we love about a night watchman.
Yeah.
People hate it.
Yeah.
My personal favourite thing about a night watchman.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of all that's good about it.
I'll tell you what's also good about a night watchman is that if ever one comes out to bat and Shane Warne's in the comm box, that's such negative cricket.
Negative cricket.
What are you doing? But yeah, no. So that's what a pinch hitter is. And so the pinch hitter email is it's like that. It comes out to play first thing in the morning. It's the opposite of a night watchman, and we give everything to a cricket fan so they know what's going to happen for the day ahead. You read it, you get a bit of trivia, you see the results from yesterday, and then you can decide whether you want to just file it over there with things from head office, or you can click on links, you can follow the Qatar T10 all day, you can follow the MSL, which is just finished. It gives you the options of whether or not you want to climb into everything cricket related for the rest of the day. So that's what the pinch hitter is. Let's think about what the pinch hitter podcast is. I'd like to tick a few boxes of what we're not and then explain one thing that we are. And one thing we are certainly not in this era of post-general election is, unlike the Labour Party, we don't have a problem, or allegedly have a problem, with anti-Semitism.
Do we have a manifesto?
We don't. We have a contract with the people.
Okay.
And I think that's always important. And that's what you want, it's what I want, and that's what they want,
more importantly.
It is. So unlike the Conservative Party, we don't have, allegedly, a problem with Islamophobia. But what we do have is, and we're more than happy to admit it, it's 2019, you know, as men it's important we talk and talk about our problems,
yeah.
Is, it's not a problem, it's
just a thing.
It's, I'd say it's a string to our bow.
It's a solution.
We have a huge dislike of Australian cricket.
Specifically Australian cricket, and it's important that we make that clear.
Yeah.
It's not Australians. It's not Australian men. It's Australian cricket playing.
I'd say it's the Australian cricket fraternity.
Yeah.
I don't really know what fraternity means.
There's a couple of different reasons for that.
Yeah. I'd like to stress that as the women's game develops, maybe this dislike will spread into the Australian women's game. Currently, I don't have an issue with them.
It's not a threat,
not at all. I don't currently have a dislike for them. But I do have a dislike for Australian cricket fans.
Yes.
Or some of the ones that we've encountered at times. There are some nice ones out there.
We want to have... Let's talk about some of the issues. The threat to the game.
Yep.
Posed by Australian cricket fans.
I think
Australian cricket fans and Australian cricketers.
Mm.
And I think you can't go too far wrong if you start with getting the scorecard the wrong way around.
That's an issue.
It's a real issue. It's the biggest threat facing the game.
Yep.
Some will say it reflects the fact that they put a higher value on wickets, mm-hmm, rather than runs, and that's why they go first.
Yep.
2 for 99.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds much better than 99 for 2,
mm-hmm,
according to Australia.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's indicative of a sense of, what's the word I'm looking for? A sense of higher purpose that they don't deserve in the game.
Yeah.
A scorecard is a scorecard.
Yeah.
And I don't agree with it. I'm not against change.
Mm-hmm.
I am not and will not be the Conservative Party.
No.
But a scorecard is a scorecard.
Okay.
And I've got more.
There's more. I mean, I'm just
Zing
trying
Bales.
Trying to develop on Zing Bales. It's another one to get us started. But for me, I mean, I think I quite enjoy the fact that we have difference in how,
yeah,
we kind of view the games and how we even announce the scores. And I mean, it's to me that all comes in one box of, you've got the 2 for 99, you've got your Kookaburra ball,
yeah,
as opposed to the Duke. And it's the same game done in a different way. But I've never thought about, do I have an issue with the scorecard? And you know, potentially I do. And if I do, then I'd like to explore that at some point.
Well, let's take that as a theme.
Yep.
And we can explore that as we discover ourselves and cricket throughout the podcast.
Absolutely. Yeah. No. I'm all for.
Let's see how we feel about the layout of scorecards.
Yes.
And others,
yep,
and other things that we might disagree with.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, to kind of kick us off, or to go a bit further into just a more general point on Australian cricket, is there which Australian player or official? Because I always like to broaden it to Cricket Australia as a governing board.
Yeah, you can't have too much James Sutherland.
You can't
on the podcast.
Has he left the Cricket Australia in the end?
Physically, potentially.
Yeah. But he's with us. He's with us.
In all the corners.
He has.
Cricket Australia.
He has. And I did enjoy it when he did a impromptu press conference the morning after Sandpaper Gate in a park in Sydney or Melbourne, wherever it was. So for you, which Australian player or official most winds you up or has most wound you up during your cricketing life?
I think I'm going to answer that in two parts, Tom.
Okay.
This is Boris's Britain now.
Fine, yeah.
And I'm going to answer that in two parts.
Either don't answer it or just answer it however you want.
Fine. Yeah, exactly.
Or both,
which is probably sort of the same. Playing-wise, you've got... It's kind of difficult, isn't it? Because you grow up watching Australian cricket. Most of our first memories of Ashes cricket is then being 500 for 2,
mm-hmm,
you think
2 for 500,
mm-hmm, and you think this is going to be hard work to get into this, and then you find yourself looking at players like Greg Blewett, for example. One of my earliest cricket memories is watching Greg Blewett come out as a runner,
mm-hmm,
when Shane Warne got injured.
Oh, that's a shame.
In I think it must have been Ashes 97, I think.
Yeah, plausible.
And I remember thinking, this team of 502, they must be...
Two 500.
They must be, or whatever it was that they were, driving us into the ground back in 97. And I remember thinking, this must be a team of absolute superstars. This must be, like, they were, that 90s Australian cricket team were on another plane, weren't they? But Australian cricket is riddled with characters like Greg Blewett, who played in this all-star superstar team, but never actually, never offered anything, never contributed in quite the same way. Just went along for the ride, smashed one Ashes tests left, right, and centre, dominated the world, won multiple World Cups. Don't know if Greg Blewett was in the one day side, but I feel like throughout history there's a selection of Aussie players who just kind of dipped below the surface of greatness and didn't really offer anything to those teams, but just sort of went along for the ride. I'm thinking of your Greg Blewett, I'm thinking of your Andy Bickles, I'm thinking of your Paul Rifles,
Pistol to his mate. Yep.
I'm thinking of all those characters who just sort of floated along, didn't really offer anything, and just went along for the ride.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you say Andy Bickle, because that's my most disliked player. And I have my abiding memory from going to Australia for the 2002/3 Ashes series was just seeing him run out with the drinks with so much enthusiasm, because he was such a part of this team, and Australia cricket was just in such a great place that he wanted to get that bowler Gyderide to JL as quick as possible, or to just run out with the drinks when Pidge had got another wicket and just slap him on the arse.
Yeah.
And he just, I just thought, Andy, no.
Come on, mate.
It looked like a mascot or a child who was a ball boy. And just getting way too much out of being involved. Granted, if I'd been in his shoes, I'm sure I'd have done exactly the same.
Also, Andy Bickle in 2002/3, and I'm going to look this up. He was no spring chicken back then.
No,
this wasn't like you've got Sam Curran running out with the drinks, or Billy Root running out with drinks.
No. He must have been...
Andy Bickle would have been 30, in his early 30s.
He's in his 30s.
We're all in our 30s.
Yeah.
In 2002-3.
He definitely played in Sydney. I can't remember if he played in any of the other test matches. I think just Sydney. And I think he got Michael Vaughan out LBW, and it was clearly going over the top. Vaughan, he'd obviously already got a daddy 100.
Of course he
had. It wasn't Sam Curran running out with the drinks. It would be the equivalent of Martin Bicknell running out with the drinks for England.
It'd be like if Joe Denley sprinted out with the drinks with all the verve of someone off really contributing to the team.
Yeah.
But actually it's a milk monitor's job, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Literally and metaphorically.
Yeah.
I said I'd answer that question in two parts, and I feel like I know that there was a part of that answer that you were looking for.
Well, it came perfectly, fitted like a glove.
There was part of that answer that you were looking for, which is obviously your friend of mine, bloody good rep, Shane Warne.
Good man.
I think we need early on to set out our stall on Warney.
Yeah.
What he's brought to the game, what he hasn't brought to the game.
What it brings to our lives.
And what users can expect to find.
Yeah, I think we'll always be on Warney Watch.
Yep.
Within the pinch hitter email, there's regular feature of Where's Warney.
Yeah.
Just to keep us aware.
In our hearts.
Probably. In our hearts, in our minds. Because, I mean, this man travels. He travels, boy.
Oh,
he
Where's he been?
Well, he was over in LA looking at... There's talk of some a film based on him leading one of the IPL sides to victory. He's always over in London if he's not if he's playing poker somewhere. And he was very 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 prolific on social media promoting Zach Goldsmith for his seat of Richmond Park, which sadly Zach...
Lord Goldsmith.
Lord Goldsmith,
as we're now
absolutely. Yeah, he's if you lose your seat, then you go into the Lords. Apparently,
and
that's the game.
Vars. very much the FA Vars.
Very much.
UK politics.
Of UK politics. So it's Warney. I guess when I was growing up, yeah, I had that real frustration that he was just way, way too good.
Yeah.
2005, I can't remember exactly the figures, did he get 42 wickets or something?
Something like that.
But he was amazing, and he could also bat a bit, but we took the fight to him.
Yeah.
So it was enjoyable. Yet 2006/07, he was again dominant and talking about, oh, I don't know who's writing my own scripts. Come on, Warney. Yes, thanks. Yeah. Great.
It's been done.
But post cricket playing career, he is incapable of living a quiet life.
Yeah.
He's an entertainer, which is fine.
Sure. Probably a cricketer third.
But he provides content.
Yeah.
And so I think hopefully I'm correct in saying, yeah, we'll always be looking out for Warney.
Yeah.
We're always here if you want to talk, Shane. But equally, if we see him do something which we find amusing, then we'll probably share it.
Talk about it, and that won't always be positive.
No, not necessarily.
We're here. We are objective.
Absolutely.
Our job isn't to criticise Shane Warne.
No. Nope.
Just to comment on his whereabouts,
yep,
his dealings,
yep,
his opinions,
mm-hmm,
on Fox News, for
mm-hmm
example,
mm-hmm,
and what it is that we think he's bringing to the game.
Yeah.
Which generally is quite biased and generally erratic punditry.
Absolutely. But in the same breath, that obviously makes it entertaining. Was there anything else you wanted to climb into on the Warney?
On the Warney thing. No, I'm just looking at Warney's latest commercial enterprise.
Is he covered in paint?
He has recently been covered, yep, in paint. Looks like he's making a play for sponsoring Diwali.
Excellent.
Not just yet, Shane.
Nope.
His latest... not sponsored Diwali. Shane Warne's latest commercial enterprise. In line with Big Bash, it's Supercoach.
It's
not
super
just any coach.
Supercoach, mate.
He's a Supercoach, mate. I mean, it's called the Supercoach Coach. They're referring to Warney as a Supercoach Coach. Not a huge amount of coaching experience yet.
Nope.
Obviously lined up to coach in the 100.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Has he always been a fan of the 100?
Always been a fan of the 100.
Yeah, from day one, I think.
From day one, yeah. I mean, you might see some of his tweets.
Yep.
That were kind of anti-100 and anti the change in the game.
I think they were misinterpreted.
Yeah.
In a wider context, they make a lot of sense.
Yeah,
the wider context being that he then got offered
a job,
yeah, a big contract.
Yeah.
Then you can understand why maybe he was negative about it to begin with.
I think what you get to learn and to some extent love about Warney is that his opinions on things will change.
Yep.
As the commercial situation.
Yeah.
Vis-a-vis his employment with that entity
that
changes
board,
as well.
That whoever, so, yeah. Well, he's
I for one don't have a problem with that.
No, he's malleable, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
And I think there were rumours in the past that he'd maybe had a bit of work done to keep the malleable theme going, but say only rumours, and I'd like to see some evidence before we go a bit further on that.
Yeah. I mean we could just get some evidence, but
not on a podcast.
We've got a whole series to get through. We don't
absolutely
into all of our
no absolutely but good to always good now. To always good to talk about Shane.
Yeah,
always good to think about him.
Regular segment of
Warney, and he will always be somewhere,
and he will always be almost definitely getting paid for being there.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what the man does.
Paying to be there. And have his teeth look significantly better when he leaves.
Absolutely. So yeah, should we look into a bit of modern day cricket?
Let's have a look.
What I've really enjoyed about since the Ashes actually is the World Test Championship, and yeah, I think it's great that
context, mate. It's all about context.
Bit of context to it, but I think it's brilliant that just when you've got some context, you then chuck in the odd series that doesn't count or contribute, yeah, to the World Test Championship,
and then not be able to explain why.
No,
I think it's fair to say we operate in pretty advanced cricketing circles.
Mm-hmm.
I like to think us and most of our mates have got our fingers pretty much on the pulse.
Yep.
I haven't found anyone who independently has worked out why the second series that England played after the launch of the World Test Championship, long-awaited launch of the World Test Championship, was not a part of the World Test Championship. And don't expect us to come to you, listeners, with answers.
No. I mean, and I've just...
I'm not...
I mean, a bit like Michael Gove, I don't believe in experts a lot of the time. And I've not done much research on this particular topic. But if you just look at some of the basics of why... And I love the World Test Championship as a concept.
Yeah.
I think it's great and it does add context. And I've never been more interested in Test cricket, not in England, or not with Tests that England are playing in. But England went to New Zealand for a two-Test series in 2018.
Yeah.
Off the back of another Pomni Shambles, I think we called it.
Pomni Shambles.
Down under.
Pomni Shambles 2.
Just a 4-0 defeat. 4-0's fine. 4-0's fine. As long as it's not a whitewash, that's fine. Yeah. So we went and played two tests then, which, again, it's why are we doing two tests? Two test series are rubbish.
It's also the second time in two series that we've been there under the kind of umbrella of a reboot or a new era for the England team.
We've rebadged it,
you fool. We went down there last time and you had the likes of, I mean, Craig Overton made his debut in the Ashes.
Yep.
Ashes. Jack Leach came in.
Leachy.
We were giving James Vince another go,
yep.
I think, at the start of that series. Bang. First innings, 59 all out.
Yep. I think Overton 59? Top scored.
Overton top scored from number yep. 9.
And then got dropped.
Yep.
Always good to see the bowl is getting dropped when the batsmen have failed.
And then the bowlers have top scored.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fast forward to, what are we now? 20 months?
Yep.
From that point?
You do the math.
And we're in the exact same situation. We're going to New Zealand for a contextless two-test series.
Mm-hmm.
It's another reboot. We've rebadged it again, you
fool. Yep.
Similar outcome.
Mm.
I think it's frustrating, isn't it, as England fans, that there are these kind of... that there is this consistent need for reboots. But
yep.
I don't think that's the major problem with the format here. I think the problem is that why aren't... New Zealand are a great side, they've got some great players. Why are we going there for these silly little two-test
yeah.
series every couple of years?
Even if it's not going to be part of the World Test Championship, then let's go and play four tests against them.
Yeah.
They're ranked second in the world.
Yeah.
Them beating us wasn't a surprise.
Yeah.
And yet to make it even more ridiculous of this series, the two-match series, New Zealand then went to Australia for the first test of their three-test series, I believe.
Yeah.
Maybe four, three. And they were undercooked.
Yeah.
Because playing in New Zealand is very, very different to playing in Australia.
Yeah,
now,
that's the other thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Everyone kind of treats it as a bit like always treats New Zealand as a bit of a warm-up for playing
yeah.
either us or Australia, really.
Yeah, yeah.
The conditions in New Zealand are completely unique.
Couldn't be any more different.
They're a fantastic side in their own right. And I think it shows that teams have been not necessarily given the respect they deserve.
Yeah,
and
surprise, surprise, the Kiwis then got rolled in Perth, and the Aussies just go back to absolutely pummeling teams.
Yeah,
and it's just a shame we don't help that by going and doing a pointless series, which then leads to that. But anything else in the World Test Championship? Well, we've got it.
I can go down the rabbit warren of the scoring system.
Yeah, nice, really very good. Yeah, happy to touch on it.
I think I'm right in saying. And you'll get to understand that serious accuracy of stats isn't something that the Pinch Hit podcast is going to be known for.
No, why bother?
But India currently leading the World Test Championship as far as I understand.
Mm-hmm.
The scoring system currently as it is has meant that the West Indies and India got more points for winning both of their two test series against the West Indies
mm-hmm.
than England did for winning two tests
yep.
in a five-test Ashes series.
Mm-hmm. Bit more pressure in that, I would have thought.
Yeah, you'd have thought so. So India currently sitting at the top of the table with 7 wins from 7, 360 points.
Loud and proud.
England sitting in fifth with just 2 wins from 5, mm-hmm. 156 points.
Mm-hmm.
Giving Australia a points per win ratio of something like, he gets his calculator out, giving Australia a points per win ratio of 51. And England a points per win ratio of 26.5.
Yep.
The last, I think, and this will be my final point on this, my last, the last thing Test cricket needs is another more complicated scoring system.
An additional complication.
It's done based on points contested. So Australia have India have contested a total number of points.
Isn't it 120 points available per series?
Yeah.
And then it's divided by how many tests there are in that. So yeah, therefore, if you're playing a longer series, you get less points for getting more points. But if you're trying to explain what cricket is, what a no ball is, what the LBW rule is, and then you've got this to include as well, it doesn't help people.
Yeah, exactly. And if what we're doing is looking for context, another complex scoring system doesn't offer us that.
And we'll certainly climb into the World Test Championship again. Another glaring issue with it is the fact that you don't play everybody home and away. You don't play every team, and it's I'm always a big fan of starting something and then developing it.
I think we're always going to be big fans of innovation in the game.
Yep. Zinger bales.
100 zing bales.
For zing bales. Yep.
It's a pyramid instead of a rope these days. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It makes sense. We like it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm personally really looking forward to the 100. You can expect to hear the 100 get really bashed across this podcast.
Yeah, now Warnie's involved. I'm behind it.
More of a Stephen Fleming man myself, but
yeah,
you can expect lots of 100 bashing over the course of the pod. But I think innovation is what cricket needs. I'm a big fan of it giving that context of trying new things.
Yeah,
I think it shoots itself in the foot so often when it innovates in the wrong way or just misses the mark on its innovation. I think the World Test Championship scoring system has done that.
A prime example of it. But let's not major on negatives. Mm-hmm. Let's dive a bit deeper into something that was quite negative actually. England's tour to New Zealand.
Yeah.
There were a couple of positives to highlight was Joe Denley's catching.
Yep.
Snaffled a couple of absolute beauties. And as you said, England went out there with a few questions and looking to reboot. And we've certainly helped that by Zach Crawley, opening batsman, going at number 7.
Six.
Was it 6?
Yeah. 6. I think it was 7 because I think it was a Matt Watchman.
Yeah, he was definitely low down. He definitely came after Pope. And Stokes and the rest. So
I think it goes back to our personal favourite topic of conversation, mm-hmm. Selection meetings.
Yep.
Talking about my personal the things I like most about cricket. Starting from the bottom,
mm-hmm.
wickets,
mm-hmm.
runs,
mm-hmm.
selection meetings at the top.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's what we're all here for.
Yep.
And you can expect a lot of them on the podcast.
Yep.
But I think we kind of finished the Ashes and rebranded this as the second coming of Joe Root's England.
Yep.
And what we ended up with was a bit of a mishmash.
Mm-hmm.
All that really changed was Johnny Bairstow got dropped.
Mm-hmm.
That was the only big name we didn't see on tour.
And then reselected.
And
almost selected for that tour as well.
He was selected for that tour, then deselected for that tour to go and work in his Red Bull game.
Yep, which he has.
And then selected for the South Africa tour, having worked in his Red Bull game. I'm just checking my notes in no games.
Yeah.
13 not out today. 13, he sorry. Out. 35 balls.
Apparently down to a full toss.
Did he?
Yeah.
Lovely. So he's working on it.
He's working on his Red Bull game.
We saw just a bit of a mishmash of what Joe Root wanted from the team, of what Ed Smith wanted from the team, what Chris Silver wanted from the team.
Spoons. Yeah.
I heard him referred to as spoons.
Mm.
By Sam Curran on Rifle Podcast Wisden Cricket Daily.
Very good. Yeah.
I thought a bit familiar, Sam.
Yeah.
And secondly thought, fantastic nickname.
Mm.
And one I'm going to try and work into one of my mates somewhere along the line.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
But I think what we got was just a hybrid, didn't we? Yeah. I think, personally, I'm a big Johnny Bairstow fan, and he seems to have been tainted with this kind of... He's been a bit overly demanding, he's been a bit precious about keeping wicket and keeping hold of the gloves. I think, what more do you want from your wicketkeeper than to want to keep wicket?
Mm-hmm. It's a good starting point. Yeah.
Personally, I would have thought it was a bit weird if he'd just gone, not for me, actually.
No, not for Johnny.
And he's been moved up and down the order. He scored 103, he batted at 5, he's batted at 4, and he's batted at 7 in the Ashes. And it hasn't gone great. And for, I personally would have said a better kind of reboot of this team would have been for us to give Johnny Bairstow a position, a place in the team, and said
a specific role
that he can be accountable to, and say, you're either batting at 7 and you're keeping wicket, for it, or you're batting at 3. You've had success there before, you're accountable to that now. Bat at 3.
Do you think, and this has been very harsh on him, is he suffering from Phil Jones syndrome? I don't know where I'm meant to play.
Oh.
I don't know where I'm best played.
I 100% think that's what he's suffering from. And in a lot of ways, you could almost, certainly early on in his career, there were a lot of similarities between him and Phil Jones.
Both pull very good faces when required.
Both pull fantastic faces when required. Both incredibly angry.
Mm.
Both go very red.
Mm.
Both, in a lot of ways, were the centre-back Man United should have been built around.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But I think what we've done is go into... So that's my take on the biggest change that was made for that side.
Yeah, not happy. You weren't happy, were you?
I wasn't unhappy. I can completely understand why he was dropped.
Yeah.
I just think, in a team that doesn't exactly have an abundance of test quality batsmen, dropping someone who is undoubtedly test quality, without giving him a role that he can be accountable to, didn't get us off on the best footing.
Yeah.
But I think what we saw was that kind of confusion of thought played out. Everyone went into that first test saying that the team had the right sort of balance. Mm-hmm. It had 3 top order batsmen that were all.
Yeah. It's now a proper team. It looked like a proper old fashioned lineup.
The balance felt right. Was what everyone was saying. Joe Denley was at 3.
Yeah.
That. To say that a well balanced team has Joe Denley at 3, is an interesting concept for a lot of people.
Yeah, you're struggling.
Australians.
You're struggling with that, aren't you? Yeah.
And then you've got obviously that powerhouse middle order. You've got Ollie Pope coming in at 6, which is his natural position.
Yep.
He's the kind of heir apparent to Joe's route back at number 4.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Ben Stokes at 5 doing his thing. We think we're seeing him become more of a batsman these days than a specific all-rounder. And then you've got your bowlers. You've got Joffre as your gun bowler.
Mm-hmm.
Broadie's your old head.
Yep.
And then you've got Sam Curran bringing a bit of left arm.
Mm-hmm.
A bit of left arm variation. And Jack Leach is a proper spinner who can do loads of things.
Yep.
I think that's probably what we missed with Mo.
Mm-hmm.
Was that holding bowler,
absolutely,
that attacking bowler.
Mo wasn't really, really providing that in the latter stages of his test career, was he?
When exactly.
The odd moon ball.
Yeah, the odd beamer. Moon ball. Watching him bowl to Steve Smith was just like watching a kid chuck a tennis ball up against a wall. And it felt right, didn't it? It felt like that was a team that we could kind of hang our hat on to go forwards. But when you kind of pick a little bit below the surface, you kind of think, well, Dom Sibley's in his first test. He scored a lot of runs in the county championship, and he absolutely deserves to be there. But his technique's a little bit funny. He's going to take a little bit of time to bed in. Joe Denley's never really had that much success in first class cricket at number 3. Is that something we want to be hanging our hat on?
Yeah.
Joe Root at 4, fantastic, brilliant double 100 on the flat deck. Exactly what he needed. Ben Stokes at 5. I think that's a really significant change for me. Moving him from 6, where he can be that kind of all rounder, get his all round game going. He can start to make things happen. I always think that your job, if you're batting at number 5, is still to score 250.
Absolutely.
I think, or to set out as if you can score 250.
Yep.
I think Ben Stokes at his best when you just let him get involved in the game in whatever facet and however he wants to get involved in it, let him do it.
Yep.
I think there's too much pressure on him to be a batsman at 5. So that for me is a little bit. Is something that needs solving.
See, I'd have been happy with him at 3. See, the It won't happen, but Ben Stokes...
Well, he was at three, wasn't he, for one innings?
For one innings in West Indies or Sri Lanka, was it?
Yeah.
Look at what he did at Headingley. I mean, overnight he was something like two not out off 76 balls. And he can play as defensive as he wants, but then he can tee off when he wants as well. Yeah. I've never been that big a fan of his bowling either. But he's just got that... that thing about him, as they love to say in the con box.
Makes things happen,
makes
Stokes.
Things happen, Stokes. And whether it's just a snarl or whatever. But he played in the final test at the Oval as a batsman on his own.
Yeah.
As only a batsman. And again, it'd be nice if we had a few more reliable batsmen around him.
Yeah. I think it's definitely not the preferred solution is Stokes batting at five. And I actually think he's technically our best batsman at the moment. I think Joe Root still looks like his bat is too big for him. Mm-hmm. Still looks like he's about to fall over and loses his head every time he plays on the offside.
Yep.
But I think Stokes, and that's why he went to three. And I like the idea of him at three as well. But I do think it changes his role in the side.
Yep.
And it's just another example of one of those things that once you start to scratch the surface, isn't quite there at the moment. You've got Butler at seven. We've kind of hung our hat on Butler being the keeper batsman at seven. Personally, I love Joss Butler as a cricketer, but I don't know what he's done to deserve us hanging our hat on him in that way.
Yeah.
I think if you look at him and Johnny Bairstow, Johnny Bairstow's first class record is significantly better than Joss Butler, and prior to Joss Butler's kind of run in the side over the last year or so, his test record was significantly better. I've gone for Ben Folkes at seven if we're dropping Johnny Bairstow.
Yep.
And I can completely see why that's been done. He looks like he needs a rest.
Mm-hmm.
If we were dropping him, I'd have told him to just go away, forget about test cricket and focus on staying as the best white ball opener in the world.
Maybe go and play some shield cricket, or are you saying to forget about red ball cricket entirely?
I think if we're, I personally wouldn't have dropped him, but I think if you are dropping him, say, look, Johnny, thanks for this, we're going a different direction now. Focus on being the best white ball cricketer in the world, or give him a job and say, this is your job now.
Yeah.
Get better at it in test cricket, in the England environment.
Yeah.
Don't do this kind of halfway house thing. We've seen it so many times before, where we've seen it with Johnny Bairstow before, actually. He spent the first 3 or 4 years of his test career carrying drinks on and off. Didn't really develop quite as much as he would have hoped. And it wasn't until 2015 when he got dropped, went back and played county cricket and scored Ramp-Cash-esque runs that he really kind of developed.
Yeah.
I think what we've done is actually kind of probably messing his head a little bit more.
Yeah.
So I would have gone Folkes at seven.
Yeah.
Curran at eight, I think, is exactly what you want there. He bats, he bowls, he makes things happen. It works. The problem then is when you bring Jimmy back into the side, you've got Jofra Archer at eight, which fills one place too high for him.
He needs to learn to bat a little bit more sensibly, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He does seem to chuck his wicket away, because, I mean, Broad now just may as well go out to bat without a bat.
It's a really interesting point on Stuart Broad, isn't it?
Mm.
Nearly called him Chris Broad then.
That's his dad.
Which is his dad. And still interesting that he's played probably three times as many tests as his dad now. People still call him Chris Broad.
Yep.
And also, he shares my name.
Yep.
and is one of my favourite all-time test cricketers. Stuart Broad, he's got 475 to 480 test wickets at about 28 now.
Circa, yeah.
From 140-odd tests. Mm-hmm. People still use his batting as a stick to beat him with.
Yep.
And you've just done it.
Yeah, I have. But the issue is he used to be reasonable at batting, and he got 160-odd at Lord's, I believe.
Totally legitimate test.
So he's the most legitimate test that I know.
Yeah, certainly the most legitimate test.
Absolutely. But then he did get hit in the face by a bouncer, and he's never quite bounced back. Although I think maybe there's one test this summer where he smashed 40-odd or something.
He's always going to be quite good for that, isn't he? He's always going to be quite good for a get both legs out of the way and slot sweep. I remember back in the day when we had Mo batting at eight and Broadie was coming in at about, probably coming at number nine, sort of 2015 Ashes. That partnership was one of our most productive partnerships, wasn't it? I think he's still got it in him.
Yeah.
We saw it a couple of times over the summer that he can still tee off with the best of them when he needs to.
Yeah. So you're saying, is this you becoming a bit Michael Vaughan and saying that Jimmy Anderson and Stuart Broad should never play in the same test team together, ever?
This is an example of me bringing a problem.
Okay.
But no solution.
Excellent.
Not my role.
No.
Not my role. But I do think that you've then got to bring... Jimmy gets back inside. Mm-hmm. Jimmy and Brody play together until... Mm-hmm. Until they don't like each other anymore. But then you've got, it feels like you've got Archer one place too high.
Mm-hmm.
Batting at eight. You've probably then got Broad and Leach one place too high.
Mm-hmm.
Because Broad's got about nine. Leach is probably going to bat 10 or three.
Ooh, well, I'd have Leach definitely at nine.
Broadly.
Absolutely. Because Leach, as we've seen this summer, can hold up an end and can get 90 if required against the Irish powerhouse of Test cricket, who just cancelled their one Test fixture for 2020 yesterday.
Positive steps in the right direction.
Absolutely, keep on walking. I mean Jack Leach goes out with the mentality of I'm going to support the batsman. Stuart Broad, I'm not saying he goes out with a selfish mentality. I'm not calling him Kevin Peterson or someone else like that. Heaven forbid. But I think that Stuart Broad goes out with the attitude of the batsmen make the runs. I'm here to get wickets, so I'm going to swing the bat.
Yeah,
and we'll see what happens. But don't expect to have a long partnership with me.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'd have Leach.
So you might as well get him in as late as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I mean, Anderson doesn't really fancy a bit of batting either. But if the rest of the team performs, then we can have two rabbits.
I think, and that's not necessarily a problem, but I do think that once you get down to... I love Sankar, and I think he's going to be a really big player for us over the next few years, but I just think you have to have Jimmy and Broad in the side. Mm-hmm. Archer's not going anywhere anytime soon. But Sankar balances the side so well because mm-hmm. he can bat at eight and it fits.
Mm-hmm.
He's technically very correct. It just makes the whole side...
Yeah,
look so much stronger on paper, and that's part of, I think, what kind of lulled us into this false sense of security going to the first test mm-hmm. in New Zealand, was the side looked mm-hmm. much better than it actually probably was once mm-hmm. you scratched below the surface. I think we went into this reboot with a kind of side that looked great on paper, but there's definitely still a few things that we need to solve.
Yeah.
After that first test, Root's captaincy was getting called into question again. Weirdly, he's in that position that we saw with Alistair Cook
mm-hmm.
a couple of years ago, where as soon as you score runs, you're a much better captain.
For sure, yeah.
And there's just not that extra stick to beat you with.
Yeah.
I think New Zealand, we probably get a 5 out of 10
yeah.
for the side. I think some of the young players came in and did quite well.
Yeah.
I think I've seen a lot of calls for Dom Sibley. I think Athers, Lord Atherton,
mm-hmm.
Expressed some concern about Dom Sibley opening in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
I think he looked pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I think he looked all right. I think he looked solid at the top of the order. I think he's got that funny kind of crabby technique that's going to get pulled to pieces
mm-hmm.
whenever he doesn't do well in Test cricket. But I think he set himself up well. He looks to dig in. He doesn't mm-hmm. throw his wicket away. I think that's what we need. I think there's a lot of potential there. I think Ollie Pope looks to the manner born.
Yeah, and great to see someone else who can just take the gloves as well. So
yeah, exactly.
I think I'd just love to see a team of batsman keepers, if possible. And maybe we could fingers crossed, get a bowler keeper in there at some point.
Yeah, it's that classic, isn't it? Alex Hales, fielding position on Cricket Info, occasional wicket keeper.
Excellent. Tom Banton.
Is there any?
Took the gloves in the BBL today.
Did he?
Yeah.
Had a good start to the BBL, I saw. Two wides in his first over.
Yep. Did you see the biggest wide of all time?
I haven't seen it. How big?
Think Harmison. I mean, we are talking at the Gabatoir again.
Yeah, yeah. More space to be wide at the Gabatoir.
Harmison's first ball did actually pitch on the on the square, and then I think went to Flintoff at second slip, was a chap called Danny, or Daniel his first name. Left arm chap, and I think he was trying either a knuckleball or a slower ball out the back of his hand, and it basically went towards the umpire's square leg.
Lovely.
And there was chuckles. It was fine.
Did I don't exactly know the rules on this. I don't know if it has to pitch on the strip for this to come into play. But one of my favourite shots ever in cricket is in a county championship, and I'm going to talk about Johnny Bairstow again.
Mm-hmm.
The ball pitched and then kind of lollipopped out sort of out towards kind of extra cover on the square.
Yeah.
And Johnny Besso just ran from the crease out into the square.
Yeah.
And just smashed it for four. And I had no idea that was a legal shot.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to see it more often.
Was this during when he was scoring?
This is when he was scoring loads runs of runs, yeah, as opposed to not scoring any runs.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't think that happened today.
Definitely didn't. No. Definitely didn't happen.
Missed opportunity.
Definitely didn't happen today. But yeah, we've gone down a rabbit hole there from talking about what England's sensible batting lineup was or should have been in New Zealand to talking about the BBL day one, which is fine. That can happen.
I love the BBL. Let's finish off on the batting lineup.
Okay. Yeah. So you've basically said again. You said you're not a solutions man. You're a highlights of problems man. So you've got one too many bowlers in your team. You've got batsmen. You're happy with Sibley. You're happy with Pope. I'm guessing you're happy with Root and Stokes.
Yeah.
And Rory Burns, I think,
is doing all right.
We're fine with that.
He made runs today,
yep.
I believe.
Not many, maybe 20 or 30 odd.
Danny made runs today, retired out.
Danny retired out. Can you give us your England 11 for.
Let's go.
Let's imagine it's Boxing Day. You might have
my favourite day of the Christmas period.
Your favourite day of Christmas? Interesting. You might have a slight hangover.
Yeah.
I don't know, do you drink?
Oh, do I drink? Oh, he says, do I drink?
Yeah, apparently he does.
I mean, not so much at Christmas.
No, not too much. So it's Boxing Day. The test, if I remember correctly, and I do like to get these things right, is at Centurion.
Starts about 9:30 a.m.
9:30, it might even be a bit earlier than that. Yeah, I'd hate to pull you up on it. I think it might be 8 a.m. Okay. Which is what this current warm-up game starts at as well. You'll be up at 9:30. You'll be there for 9:30, just in time for last half an hour of the first session.
Yep.
So Joe Root will go out to the middle with a bit of faff, and they'll toss a coin, and who's on his team sheet?
I think Sibley and Burns are pretty locked in, aren't they?
Sibley and Burns, you've locked them in. Yep.
I'm a big Creepy Crawley fan. John, Zach, or otherwise.
Yep. And do you know any others? In any
place near Gatwick.
Place near Gatwick, absolutely.
I think Zach Crawley is going to score a lot of runs for England, but I think Dom Sibley did enough for me in New Zealand. He's got that weird, crabby technique, like I said, but I think, I mean, South African pitches the way you're going to.
Yep.
Live and die and learn about that technique. Rory Burns.
Yeah, always good to have a right left combination at the top, because if there's one thing that international bowlers shouldn't be able to deal with is changing.
Yeah.
And having to go round.
And why should you have to run from fine leg to fine leg?
Yeah, exactly. Good exercise. Yeah, exactly. It's like a longer bleep test.
Who's at three? Denley for me at three.
Joe Denley, good man.
Disposable Denley.
Disposable Denley. Yeah.
Joe Root's at four. I'm going Stokes at five.
Root's still your captain.
Still my captain.
Still your captain.
My captain, yep. Joe Root, for the time being. I think we need to give the new era time to bed in.
Yeah, let's leave that.
Before we get rid of him. And also,
shouldn't have gone there.
Also, who else is going to do it?
Nope.
Ollie Pope at six.
Stokes at five, Pope at six.
You've got Alf Butler at seven. I would personally have picked Ben Foulkes.
So for the benefit of the tape, you know, we're not in a interview situation here in the old nick, so to speak. But Terence, as I'm going to call him here, is actually writing down his team, which is fine. I'm intrigued by why you've decided to put Ollie Pope, whereas you've put the surname of all the others. I mean, is there someone we're getting confused with? The only other Pope I can think of is the Pope.
Well,
I've not been keeping an eye on his runs of late.
Runs are good. He has had the runs.
He's had the runs. Okay, that's fine.
Better player of spin.
Better player of spin, yeah. Good. It's a flat track than the Vatican City,
exactly.
Isn't it?
The reason I put Ollie Pope is because, and this is us getting a little bit deep into my psyche, is I spent a long time referring to him as, of his namesake, fantasy football hero, and Burnley goalkeeper, Nick Pope.
Yeah, good, fine.
Several years older, significantly lankier.
Yep.
And much better at a clean sheet.
Yep.
But
Started his career at Charlton.
Started his career at Charlton.
Yeah. And did you hear that excellent stat? Not even a stat, just a bit of trivia. Throwaway of that it was the first time in 40 or 50 years that England had had the same goalkeeper surname as the wicketkeeper surname.
Yes, I did. Fantastic.
In Test cricket, I stress. Men's Test cricket and men's football.
And my feedback on it was, if only there'd been two international sportsmen called Seaman.
It would have just been perfect.
It would have been perfect.
It's all I want. So that's fine. Okay, so that's cleared that one up. So nothing to do with...
This is my problem
spot.
Not a huge fan
of Oliver the Musical.
Fan of Oliver the Musical.
It's a shame. Good musical.
Ollie Carter, friend of the podcast.
Butler is at seven.
He's nailed on, like I said, for me.
So we've got 8, 9, 10, 11.
This is where I'm struggling.
If it's not going to spin, then Leach gets the over. Or is Leach always going to be there? And I prefer it when he's there. Because he did get dropped for the second test in New Zealand, but then he was in hospital with gastroenteritis.
But also, he probably wouldn't have played even if he had.
Yeah.
Even if he hadn't had gastroenteritis.
But I'm going to have to ask you for your 8, 9, 10, 11 here.
I'm going
to
go...
Start at 11.
I'm going to go Archer at 8.
Archer at 8.
Broady at 9.
Broad at 9. Goodness me.
Leach at 10.
Right, so that's Leach at 9, Broad at 10.
Leach at 9. Okay, I'll give it to you. Leach at 9, Broad at 10. And Jimmy at 11. That feels like you've got a bowler too many there. Especially when you've got Stokes at 5. It feels ever so slightly in bouncing. And this is what I was saying about everyone kind of talking about this new era and kicking off with a better balanced side.
Yeah.
We've definitely got a bot. We've definitely got a seamer too many in there.
Yeah.
But Archer's not going anywhere. I mean,
yep.
The prospect of him wanging it in on South African pitches is...
Ramping it up at the Wanderers. Yep.
Jimmy and Broadie have those two positions, 10 and 10 and 11, for as long as they want them.
Yep.
And then I don't like the idea of going in without a spinner. So, I mean, Chris Wokes solves the problem. He can bat at 8 comfortably as well.
Yep.
But all three of those seamers need to play. So I think...
Yep.
I think what we really want is Archer to... I mean, Pat Cummins is a fast bowler.
Yep.
Who's developed his batting to bat properly like a number 8.
Yep.
He can go when he needs to and he can dig in when he needs to.
Yep.
I think we just have to be a little bit reliant on Archer.
We need a bit more with the bat. A bit more with the bat from Archer. I mean, to bring the great man back into conversation again, Warnie was a number 8. Sadly, never made a test ton, did he?
Sadly?
Really sadly. Yeah. I struggle to talk about it, to be honest.
Do you want to keep talking about it?
But I will. I don't know how well you know what happened when he got his 99. But it was at the Wacker. Against New Zealand, and he'd been doing what Warnie does, which is batting in an unorthodox fashion, and the odd squirt through third man off his legs and walking across his stumps and all the rest of it, and he got to 99. Then a specky bowler, let's call him, Danny Vittori, bit of left arm spin.
He said, "Harry Potter in disguise."
Harry Potter in disguise.
Not a great disguise. The Barmy Army.
Not a very good disguise. But he said, "You know what, Warnie? You're on 99. I'm gonna put the ball above your eye line and see if you can resist temptation." Now Warnie couldn't resist temptation. Skied it, and was caught. Very sadly.
Oh, that's a shame.
So never got a test ton. So he'd be in good company in this room.
I've never got one.
Join the club.
I've just found a video on Twitter of your friend and mine, Paul Collingwood, in the nets facing Jofra Archer.
Excellent.
It's on a loop, but it looks like he's bowled a full over at him, and he gets cut in half every single time.
But Collie doesn't have a problem with that, I'm sure. Collie would happily
play and miss at six balls. Fantastic cut just behind.
Yeah, just is Collie doing his minimal backlift, which I really enjoyed when he brought that in.
No, he seems to have
gone Lara-esque.
He's got a little bit of a Johnny Bairstow-esque baseball bat stance.
Yeah.
And then just a little Alistair Cook kind of wobble before he hits it.
Yep.
Which is something new he's brought into his game, and I'll be honest, not working for him.
Not for Collie.
Not for me, Collie.
Not for you, Collie. Okay, so that's Collie in the nets. Always good to see. So we got down that rabbit hole because Jofra Archer's not scoring enough runs at 8 currently.
No.
I guess the other thing to remember is generally someone's injured. Whether it's Butler putting his back out in the gym, or Jimmy sadly is getting more and more injured.
Well, the thing with Jimmy is he hasn't played a test for a year now. Nearly.
Played in West Indies,
which was in
February.
Okay, so he's not played a test for 10 months.
This is true. He was doing ridiculously well in the county championship for Lancashire before he got injured.
And he was at his peak. He was at his peak just before he.
His calf popped. I don't know if you can quickly get his bowling figures up from Edgbaston, but it was, I think it was 4 overs, 3 maidens, 1 for naught.
I remember we were at the game, weren't we?
We were.
I remember it just kind of dawned on us, didn't it?
Mm.
That he hadn't been there for about 2 hours.
Yeah.
It kind of slowly spread around the ground. 4 overs, 3 maidens, 0 for 1.
That's what I said, wasn't it? That's definitely what I meant.
Yeah, it's what, yeah, I wouldn't have said it on Blockbuster.
No, no.
But yeah, I mean, there is going to be a little bit of a question mark when you haven't played for that long.
Mm.
And he's 37, he was 37 in the summer.
Yeah.
There's going to be a little bit of a question mark. But I do like that we have this, like, stable of fast bowlers.
Yeah.
It's like the old Man United strike force back in the 90s when there's always just a ready-made replacement.
Yeah.
Solskjaer off the bench.
Yeah, Sheringham.
Chris Wokes off the bench.
Yeah.
I like him as stable.
Yeah.
And that does bode well, especially with the volume of cricket we're playing lately, but it doesn't feel quite as balanced as it should.
Rackham and Stackham. And one thing which they haven't done in this squad, but I think it's worth just throwing into the mix now, because there's been talk of the great Keaton Jennings getting a call up for the Sri Lanka tour. He averages, I believe, 44 on the subcontinent, which I'd love to know why we call it the subcontinent. But I think we all understand what I mean by that. And
what would you call it?
Subcontinent.
Okay.
I don't know why.
Yeah. That.
So fine. It works. So King Keaton could be back for that. There was I speculated would the boy David Milan have been a horse for this course in Sri Lanka, because it doesn't really seem to me that we've picked a horse for this course
in South Africa.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't, does it? And it's interesting where these horses for courses things come from, isn't it? Because let's be honest, all of our horses should be made for the home course.
Mm.
And that didn't go to plan over the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So quite why we've now got a load of horses made for Sri Lankan course.
Yeah,
I don't quite know where that's come from, but it goes back to the days of Tim Bresnan, doesn't it? He was always a horses for courses selection, but played
everywhere.
Every game.
Yeah, and he was that. But it's, I think we always used to, the only time we would horse for course, and it's just great to keep saying it, isn't it? Is when we went to the subcontinent, we would always pick some ghastly average spinner who hadn't even taken that many wickets in the county championship.
I'm thinking you're Richard Dawson's.
You're Deadly Dawson's.
You're Zafar Ansari's.
You're Zafar Ansari's. Gave up the game about a minute later.
I'd rather be a lawyer than a spinner, mate.
Exactly. Good chant. But that was always... And the bit I can never understand about that was... You're basically going to these countries where they are very good at playing spin, and we are going to give them someone who wouldn't just get in their under nines spinning third 11. So we always did it there, but we didn't necessarily do it right. And so I'm very pro looking at this horses, of course. But let's do it right. So I like the fact we're opening the door for your horse being a course in the batting lineup. I like the idea of your horse, the horse for a course being Folks in the West Indies, for example, because you're going to bowl more spinners, even if what I've just said is you're playing someone who's a useful spinner.
Now we've got the luxury of being able to do that because we've got some half-decent spinners.
Exactly.
And we've got people like Keaton Jennings.
Exactly.
I think where horses for courses has got its rep from is picking your Deadly Dawson's and your Zafar Ansari's before that or after that.
Has it ever been great? I don't know, but I'd like to make horses for courses great again. Is the long and short of it?
I just feel like the other word for horses and horses for courses is
is just is no word. And that is what I want.
And that, well, that's what
another way
want.
Of putting horses for courses. Yeah,
just rephrase it.
Is to just say, we haven't got anyone else good enough. We haven't got someone. We haven't